Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Joined now by the general manager of the Chicago White Sox, Rick Hahn, is on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Sports Radio 670. The Score. Hello, Rick. How are you?
Doing well. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure on this gorgeous day to be here. I was mentioning to Connor earlier, this feels like a punctuation point. And I was deciding, is this end of Act 1, beginning of Act 2? You have literal buy-ins, like looking at the contracts, the number of people invested in this. Dallas Keuchel treating everybody to dinner. You've spent the money. You've signed the players. Where are we now? What is this?
You know, in terms of a punctuation, I'd say it's probably more comma than exclamation point.
Okay.
In other words, this is... We were very clear at the end of last season that we felt we were at the end of stage one of this rebuild, the talent accumulation stage, a good portion of the development. There were still obviously going to be trades and acquisitions in the future, and there's still going to be development in the future. But in terms of the bulk of the heavy lifting, in terms of trying to create a core, that a lot of that work had been done. Stage three, skipping over stage two for a moment, stage three was going to be when we were in the position to finally achieve our goal of being in a position to annually contend for championships. But the question is, how long this stage two is going to take? Could it take a few weeks, a few months? Is it going to take us all season? But it's the phase where these young guys continue to develop into championship caliber players. Now, adding some veterans around them, we think will help facilitate that. How quickly Luis Robert, you know, becomes Luis Robert, so to speak, we'll all find out together. Eloy's second year, how Dylan Cease advances. All those things are going to be factors in how long this second stage will take us. We love the optimism, the energy, the enthusiasm, the eagerness to win, the clubhouse, everyone in uniform saying it's now is the time. That's fantastic. But the goal from the start was to do this annually and to be in a position to do this for a long time, not just 1 year. So we'll find out together when that starts.
That sounds conservative to me. That sounds like it's expectation balancing from you.
That's fair. But keep in mind, my goal is to, or my purpose or my job is to look at the long term. And we didn't go through, and by that I mean, you know, not just the front office or the coaches or the players, but, you know, White Sox Nation as a whole didn't go through that suffering that we've had the last three plus years just to achieve a 1 year jump. Now, if there's a jump this year, fantastic. If there's the opportunity to win come July, we're going to feed it. That's fantastic. We want that. We want this window to open as soon as possible. But it was never about one season. I want to be sitting here with you guys again a year from now and talk ideally about a successful season in 2020. But boy, look what's ahead of us in 21, 2, 3, and 4 based on what these guys are capable of doing.
You said feed it. You've talked a little bit about an expectation or a willingness to feed it with not just, you know, talk and marketing stuff and advertising campaigns, but players, like bringing people over. I find it interesting that an executive is willing to talk about what they're willing to add at this point in a spring.
Well, you know, I don't know quite where those holes are going to be yet. Like,
sure.
You know, we'll find out together if we're fortunate to be blessed with good health. You know, it's possible that all our answers are internal. You know, we'll have, I do feel like a year from now, we will be in a better position from a pitching depth standpoint, simply from the natural development of some of our young guys and guys like Kopech and Rodon coming back to full health and Dunning and Lambert becoming guys who can help us at the big league level. And from an outfield depth standpoint, we've got a lot of talented guys at double A, but they're not quite ready for the big leagues yet. So a year from now, I think a lot of those answers could be floating around here. If we're in a position to win this year, it's conceivable that in the middle of the year, we might have to go outside to add to it.
How are you looking at the way the forward-facing marketing plan has been embrace the effusive joy of baseball, embrace the swagger a little bit, the whole Tim Anderson bat flip thing. I'm always intrigued by where the baseball side meets the marketing side of these conversations occur. Of like, can we put this guy on this billboard? Maybe if you can you give us a couple of names that maybe we're safe putting this guy on the other media guide kind of thing? Just like where that is about where the locked in pieces are and what you're okay with on the, like, you know, maybe we don't have to flip the bat every time to get people pissed off at us, right?
Well, if it's the Royals,
right?
You know, it's funny because you did hit on a fairly nuanced point that doesn't get talked about a lot, and that is the marketing department is in a position to create excitement and promote our guys. I am thrilled with this from the standpoint of we're finally at a point as the organization where people get to learn about our players, that they want to know about Tim Anderson, the person, or Giolito, the person, or Eloy, obviously a fantastic personality. And people are far more interested in hearing them speak than me about the plan and what we're going through and how we're going to get to where we want to be. That's a huge positive. So I'm a big fan of the whether it's us or the outside, you know, media outside the organization, exploring these guys' personality and making them more accessible to our fans. You're right, though, from sort of the, I don't know, swagger or pronouncement standpoint, mm-hmm. like the more, you know, I'd rather sneak up on people than have them have a target on our back kind of thing, at least before we win. There is a part of me is like, hey, maybe we need to pull back off the accelerator a little bit. But in the end, you know, people like it. Brooks Boyer and our marketing people are thrilled with it. So knock yourselves out, boys.
So when you sit down with Brooks and you watch all the mock-ups, have you had to, you know, when you see the Nick Madrigal poster, do you have to go, Brooks, hold that back, my man. I can't give you that.
Yeah. You know what? I hate to admit this because I still, you know, feel that I'm, you know, extremely young and hip, despite all evidence to the contrary. But there had to be a handful
of... Enjoy feeling
that. I know, right? It's a great feeling. There has been a handful of meetings with the marketing department where I've had to actually say, look, I know I'm not the target, so I'm not in a position to tell you whether thumbs up or thumbs down from my perspective, but just to let me understand what you're trying to accomplish, and yeah, it looks like you're trying to accomplish your goal.
How good does Madrigal have to be around these statistical edges to be a slappy guy of worth?
You know, it can't simply be a, you know, you say slappy around this organization.
I know exactly where it's going.
He makes fun of me, but look,
he's
a contact guy who's just going to make his outs differently.
He is going to make his outs differently, and he is a contact guy, and it's sort of more about that ball coming off the bat with authority as opposed to being slapped around.
But we know exit velocities now. Give me a number. You
exactly.
Know?
No. Yeah. And he is improving in that regard. Here's the thing, not too dissimilar from Tim Anderson. He has the ability to touch balls all around and outside the zone. That can be a positive from the standpoint of putting the ball in play and making things happen and that kind of standpoint. Timmy's obviously got more pop. So it can become a little bit dangerous for Nicky when he's just touching balls, you know, weakly around the diamond. When he's up there driving the ball with a purpose, it's probably because he's drawn in a little bit from what he's zeroed in on outside of the zone, and you're going to see those exit velocities continue to climb. And you know what? And additionally, I should point out, his walk rate improved at each of the levels he went to. The higher he went last year, and I think it was about 11% in AAA, that's sustainable. That's not just a slappy guy who's going to have to make, you know, hit his OBP. So he's only a year and a half out of the draft. You know, he's obviously a well-regarded, big name in terms of the prospect community. But, you know, he's still a work in progress.
So I'll ask Ricky Renteria the same question, but I'm interested in how your job would address this kind of thing and also how Ricky's would. I'm sure they're going to differentiate at some point. You're going to have a rookie center fielder out there surrounded by two outfielders who aren't all that great as far as range is concerned. What is the conversation that you need most to get to Luis Robert, knowing that the pressure on him to go get something in an alley might be higher, just given the skill sets of all three of those players out there?
You know, that's a perfect conversation for Ricky because he's had, or a question for Ricky because he's had those exact conversations.
Right.
I will tell you, first day of camp, literally the first day of camp, I shared with the group that, you know, one of the things that keeps me up at night is a ball in the left center field gap. And how that's going to be played between Eloy and Luis, because the last thing we need is those two extremely large men running into each other at full speed.
You guys already had Moncada with an issue. I mean, that happens in games.
I go back to Ozzie and Tim Raines.
And there was a Maglio Ray Durham one,
too,
in like
two-ish or whenever it was, but it became a real problem. It cost us a couple of key players in a year where we were positioned to win. So that, and look, that goes back to sort of what I was talking about in terms of the development of our young guys. We are thrilled with that lineup out there on a daily basis. The last stage, really, of this rebuild that was essential to winning was creating enough organizational depth to withstand injury or underperformance. It's been, as we enter year four of this, we haven't quite accomplished that yet. We're getting closer, but we aren't quite there in terms of the underlying depth that we're going to need to be a championship organization. Everyone stays healthy, guys advance, you know, develop more quickly than anticipated, we're fine. But if there is something where two guys run each other in a gap and we wind up having them down for an extended period, that's going to be tough to withstand at this current state. We're going to get to where we need to be, but that's going to be tough to withstand.
I'm also wondering, in general, from a run prevention standpoint, especially with Dallas Keuchel being defensively reliant, mm-hmm. infield defensively reliant, if this gets good and it gets good quickly, are we looking at a conscious effort to manage higher leverage situations or late game situations defensively differently? Are you already picturing in your head, hey, if we have to find and build a late inning defensive team and tinkering around the edges where our deadline stuff, we're always thinking bullpen mm-hmm. or adding a bat, then maybe you're starting to think glove work when it matters?
Very fair. I would say the more run scoring is probably the more focused upon acquisition than run prevention, but they really shouldn't favor one over the others. In the end, it's all about scoring more than the other guy, and if you can hold them down more, you're going to win right. that ball
it's,
game.
It's too bad Yolmer cost what he cost, because it's like, God, you know?
You know, and we had a lot of conversation about that, and eventually I think Nick Magrigal is going to play that caliber of defense, if not even potentially better at second base. We think that Timmy is going to continue to progress defensively, and I personally think Johan is fantastic over at third base. The athleticism, the instinct, especially on the ball in, that's pretty special. That you can't teach. With more repetition over there, the, you know, more routine stuff and more fundamental things I think are going to come too. So you've hit on an important point in terms of run prevention. You've hit on a point that we may ultimately need to figure out a way to get creative to address. That said, at least in those three guys I've named, they're going to be pretty important on ground balls. Those are pretty good defenders.
You got the Bernstein and McKnight show here on 670 The Score. Sitting down with White Sox general manager Rick Hahn, live at Camelback Ranch, Scorehouse 2, all that good stuff. I read the piece by Bob Nightingale. We talked about it at the beginning of the day. Dallas Keuchel took everyone out to dinner, apparently, and put down for the entire check. How, as the GM of this team, how do you find out about that dinner? Is there a group chat with 125 people on it that you're just part of?
I got my invitation like everybody else and thought that it was a nice gesture, but I didn't really realize that he had basically reserved all of Fleming's and that it was for players, staff, you know, PR, trainers, front office, administrative assistants, and spouses. I mean, it was every bit of 130 plus people there. His mom made a toast at the dinner, so there was family members there, and it was early in camp, and it was just, you know, a nice testament to the character of this guy. Now, we like what Keuchel brings between the lines. We love what Grandal brings between the lines, and Encarnacion in terms of the lineup. But, you know, these guys were targeted for a reason. Each of them have been in the playoffs at least four out of the last 5 years, if not all five of them, and they have, you know, that's, I hate to say it, but that veteran leadership that helps reinforce
why
the culture.
Why do you hate to say it? Because it's cliche.
Because it's cliche. That's why. But there really is something there. But as we try to take this young group and teach them how to win and teach them how to and reinforce the sacrifices and the selflessness that Ricky and the coaches are preaching, you have guys, you know, peer-to-peer who can back that up. And you know, Dallas taking that group out to dinner just sort of reinforces part of the reason why he's here.
So you're right. It's cliche to talk about veteran leadership, but I get that it matters because players think it matters.
Mm-hmm.
Thing of it is, there are different types of veteran leadership. There's Keuchels, there's Abreus, there's, you know what? Did you target his type? Or were you happy to bring in the type he brings because of the pitcher he is?
It was part of the entire package. Now, look, he wasn't the only name on our pitching target list. There were other guys that had perhaps strengths in different categories and couldn't quite match him in the leadership regard. In the end, we were thrilled that the market played out in a way that we were able to address not only, you know, reinforce the rotation for the next few years, but also add a little something to the clubhouse.
We live in baseball times where the lines between the general managerial level and the dugout managerial level are blurred. That these are all, this is a, this, everything is a team effort. All decisions are everyone's decisions. As this team, whatever you want to call it, this punctuation point, the White Sox matter more than they have in a long time. Mm-hmm. And as they matter more, is your instinct to be more involved in those things, or from, it's like the parent's dilemma, right? Is less more, and are you going to be compelled to say, no, we're doing this by this and this and this, and this is the vision?
I hope not. I don't think I'm going to. I don't think I'm going to feel compelled to do that. Might I feel from time to time that way? Perhaps. Look, and I've said this before.
And did you put the phone down? Like, do you pick it up and put it down? Like, no, just not this.
We do have I have for years now, and Kenny started this years ago. Like, we don't tend to have those conversations immediately after the game. That's a next day conversation. And we've been preparing for this. The way Ricky and the staff have gone about their business for the last 3 years, even if the talent level wasn't quite there in terms of ability to win, the game prep, the process we go through in terms of which inputs go into making the lineup and what Ricky's decisions are, and why Ricky makes his decision and what his thought process is and how he defends his decision, all that's been the same. Like, you're right, the profile is going to be higher. Arguably, the stakes are going to be higher. So these decisions are going to matter more. But the trust in his thought process has been something we've been building up for, well, more than 3 years, back to when he was the bench coach under Robbins last year. Like, we know why he comes to certain conclusions, and there's a comfort level with that. Over the course of 162, oh, yeah, you're going to disagree. That's just the nature of the beast. It's the nature of the game. It's part of what draws us to it is, you know, sitting at home on my couch, you know, you think you can manage the situation better than the guy who's looking in the player's eyes.
I don't know that feeling.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't. Other than Dan, the rest of us know that feeling, and that's inevitable. But I do have the benefit of the next day having the conversation and be like, why? What was the thought process here? What was the conversation here? And over the last several years, felt really good about how that decision-making gets done.
Rick, as a leader and a voice of the White Sox front office, how do you and your guys feel about being leaders in early player extensions?
I don't really give it much thought from a industry standpoint, from a, you know, we're at the forefront of this or an innovator in this by any stretch. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is that John Hart and the Indians teams back in the 90s were the sort of first ones to do this. We've taken it to a new level, and that's not by accident. There's somewhere in Jerry's office, there's a document that laid out, you know, sort of the blueprint for this entire rebuild. And part of one of the sections was on economic strategy.
Can I get a copy of that?
No. Okay. I'm not sure Jerry can find his right now, but it's somewhere. It's somewhere. And one of the chapters was on, you know, economic strategy. And part of that was, look, we're going to have to be aggressive on some of these young guys earlier than we've traditionally done in the past. It's getting harder to sign these guys to long-term contracts. Free agency is becoming more and more lucrative. Even arbitration is getting more expensive so that there's less of an incentive to commit early. So we knew, and Jerry bought in from day one, that we were going to be aggressive early. And so far, it's worked out all right.
What ball are we using this year?
My understanding is it's going to be the same one as in years past, including last year, and we'll see. We haven't had a ball conversation since the end of last season.
But you have to. Like, if you know you don't, that an average exit velocity mm-hmm. is going to produce 20 home runs. At what value power?
Exactly.
How do you do your job?
It makes it very difficult if you have to adjust the baseline constantly. You don't know the value.
It's not fair.
I hear you. Look, Major League Baseball has obviously heard all the noise about the ball and the impact of the ball.
We saw it with the playoff ball.
Yeah, and you know, we've been assured they've done the studies they need to do, and there'll be consistency across the league once again. So, there's certain things. I've got enough to keep me up at night, so I can try to limit it to the things I can control.
Rick, really appreciate you coming by.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely.
Good to see you.
Fun stuff. Rick Hahn, general manager of the Chicago White Sox, with Bernstein and McKnight here live at Camelback Ranch on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai,
There's joy in every journey.